This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver
Commercial
Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast. I'm Corey Wright.
And I'm Melissa Moretti.
And Melissa, on the program today, we have the one, the only investorpreneur, Pete Leung's back with us right now. Since we're kicking off kind of the second half of the season here after Labor Day, we had Alan Haig break down last week all about interest rates and kind of what's happening here in Canada. Today, we bring back, by popular demand, our international correspondent, Pete Leung, to talk about what he's seeing around the world from an investment market, because he's very diversified. But also we talk about interest rates in Canada. We talk about commercial real estate here in BC. We find out what he likes, where he's had success, what he predicts. Another tremendous show. And we also thank Pete, because we're recording here, you know, 10:30-ish a.m. Pacific time, which equates to 1:30 a.m. tomorrow in Hong Kong, where Pete's calling in from. So he's staying up to join us, but always great. Melissa, it feels like forever since we've seen each other here.
I know.
I feel like I mailed it in all summer, which wasn't the case. We were so busy.
And I've been here waiting for you.
I know. And we had expansion and construction going on and all of that stuff. So we wanted to give a lot of the listeners the opportunity to listen to some previous episodes that maybe they hadn't heard to get caught back up. But now that we're back here going, you were saying before we went on that you were really busy on the residential side.
I'm quite busy. I don't know if that's an indication of the market, but our team is generally quite busy.
Are you like quietly bragging there, or it's like, I'm busy, everyone else may not be, but I am?
No, I just don't want to give any sort of representation of how the market is. Inventory is quite high. Yeah. We're all still waiting for the buyers to go crazy.
Yeah.
You know, now the interest rates have come down a little bit.
Yeah.
So we're waiting for the buyers to start.
So here's my prediction, and I think we've talked about it on the show, that people are almost kind of sitting on the sidelines waiting for like, how low can they go,
type
of play.
Yeah.
That you need Chris Galis on the news to say, hey, the market is on fire.
Yeah.
And then people jump on and they're like, oh, let's go.
But it's not on fire.
Or you need to have Tim Macklin at the BOC say, hey, we've now lowered rates to 2.5%. This is where we feel comfortable keeping them. And this is where we want to keep them and monitor them. And that, I think, then triggers everyone to like, oh, there's the bottom. And everyone jumps back in. But yeah. I do tell everybody, you got to be careful. Because as rates are coming down, if you're trying to time the bottom of the market, there could be a point where rates do plateau, that pricing goes up, and that last quarter point you're waiting for, that last half a percent you're waiting for, might get wiped out because you might pay $50,000 for the asset that you could have got $50,000 cheaper.
I'd rather be a buyer
two months in.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm the same way. I would get in the market now. You know, real estate is a long-term play, as we always tell everybody. Get in now. Get the purchase. Rates are really good. We're seeing like sub-5 rates now on 5-year fixed in commercial, which is a great number. No need to sit on the sidelines. There's low inventory. We're seeing multiple offers.
On the commercial side.
On the commercial side. Pull out your checkbook, people. Let's go buy some real estate.
All right.
And without further ado, we got a great episode here. We kind of run long on it, so let's get to it right away. We got Pete Leung, the investorpreneur, talking all about international markets as well as BC's commercial real estate market and interest rates here in Canada. Enjoy.
All right, let's go.
This podcast is presented by Impact Commercial.
Impact Commercial, John, Alan, the team over there are fantastic. They've all been on the show.
They have, yeah.
Friends of the show.
Great guys.
Wealth of experience. They can help with all your commercial financing needs.
Whether it's owner-occupiers, land development funds, commercial investments, or multifamily, these guys got you covered.
And they recently obtained their CMHC correspondent lender status.
So for all your commercial lending needs, visit them at impactcommercial.ca.
That's impactcommercial.ca.
All right, we're here today with our Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast international correspondent, we like to call him, the investorpreneur himself, Pete Leung. Pete, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Corey. How you doing?
Good, thanks. And thank you so much for joining us. For those who don't know, Pete is calling in from Hong Kong, which at the time of recording is about 1:15 in the morning. So we appreciate it, Pete. All the listeners appreciate you taking the time, early morning, your time here to join us. But for those who haven't heard you on the program before, can you tell us maybe a little bit more about yourself and how you ended up getting into real estate?
Absolutely. So thank you for having me first and foremost, and great to be here again. My past has always been not in real estate. I've been a Vancouver entrepreneur in the element of restauranting, and I've been in the insurance and also the financial planning aspect of things in Vancouver back in my career. And I got involved in sort of real estate partly because of my accountant. And I think I remember that day that he called me and said, Peter, you really need to look into real estate in a big way because that's how wealth is built. And so from that very one day, that started my investment, or at least my understanding of the journey of real estate. It first started with residential and then moved into commercial. And again, another person inspired me by asking me one question. He said, you know, Peter, what is really asset? What is truly an asset for you? And what is a real asset in real estate? And I said, you know, that's a very interesting question. I mean, like, we're used to living in condos, we're used to living in high rises, maybe single family homes and townhomes and whatnot. And he said, and he inspired me upon real estate, you know, on a phase two, where he said, Peter, imagine this. I mean, all the developers sell the commercial, the real estate on top, right? And a building, you know, A through C unit and all the various floors. But, you know, interestingly enough, you're not going to see them sell them all, and you're not going to see them sell the commercial space. And so that is truly what asset is. Is that something that you can leave for your next generations and generations to come? So that really instilled upon me about how I can get involved in real estate. And ever since, I haven't looked back, and it's changed my life and made my life, and is hopefully for, you know, next couple of generations to come.
Amazing. Amazing. Pete, one reason why we wanted to have you on the program, as we kind of alluded to at the start, we've given you the unofficial, official international correspondent for the podcast here, is you have investments not only in real estate, but in other industries, not just here in BC and Canada, but also in the States, Europe, I'm sure Hong Kong, where you're calling in from. What we wanted to have you on today is in BC real estate, we're very fortunate. We kind of live in a bubble here a little bit where it kind of always sort of trends in the right direction. There's road bumps along the way, but over time it always works its way up. But I wanted to get your take on what are you seeing from a global standpoint, maybe continent by continent, of an economy, interest rates, all of that stuff. So I know there's a lot to unpack there. So I'm just going to step aside and let you kind of take that where you want to go. But we'd love to get your thoughts on what you're seeing worldwide in various investment markets.
Sure. That's great. I mean, I'll cover some of the things that I'm seeing certainly around the world. Well, I mean, realistically, I think, you know, everybody talks about the U.S. being sort of the first global power, superpower of finance, as well as technology and defense and whatnot. So largely, I mean, a lot of conversation around, you know, where the U.S. dollar is going to be, because every country is really founded, you know, stabilized because of the U.S. dollar. Or pegged in some way with the U.S. dollar, and with, you know, sort of now the rumors and the murmurs of U.S. dollar or the U.S. interest rate starting to come down in the very first time, and probably in this particular case in September, we think that definitely 25 pips is sort of the way to go, and probably three, you know, rate drops at between now and sort of the end of 2024. And I think largely, you know, we've talked about, you know, how the real estate as well as investments are really going to happen or turn out in U.S. Than probably the last several cycles or several times that the U.S. had dropped in rates. This is probably the first time that there is not a catastrophic, you know, sort of cliff dive off the road since the last couple of times. And so U.S. Yeah. is now really starting to just be reducing interest rate gradually and really having that soft landing, as they call it. So U.S., because of that, the DXY, the dollar index, has been relatively, you know, ever since the talk of the U.S. dollar coming down, it's starting to really unpack the rest of the world, because places like China, places like U.K., places like Canada, which has obviously started to reduce rates before yeah. the U.S., now have the really the ability to go, okay, we're now able, because of the foreign exchange and how interest rates work, that they're now able to ease their interest rates as well and actually start to not see that their currency is going to devalue so much. And so that's where you start to see things like the US dollar versus the yen, where, of course, you know, the talk of the carry trade of people borrowing in yen, which was historically low and has been sort of depressed for the last 20 years, where inflation is virtually nil, where they're now starting to see inflation. So yeah. The yen has started to appreciate quite a bit through the US dollar.
Yep.
And so because of that, a lot of, you know, previously a lot of people were borrowing yen and actually parking their money in US dollar, right? So they're virtually paying 1% or even less than that for money. And they're actually just simply putting in US dollar and getting 4, 5, 5.5% in terms of return. So there's a 4, 4.5% worth of a positive carry just by holding US dollar in term deposits.
Wow. Yeah,
and some people were using that for, a lot of people were using that for equity investments, right? Of course, if you not only put that in the bank and took a term deposit, but if you deployed that in the equity market, it'd be very, very substantial of a gain over the last couple of years as the US increased their rates. So you're starting to see the world unfold now going, okay, now we're able to reduce our rates as the US is going to come down, and you're going to see that globally as well. And that's going to, you know, help a lot of these countries start to, you know, grow as well because their interest rates are going to be a little bit lower, and easing the pressure there for many of these countries, including China, including the UK, Australia, and of course, Hong Kong as well, which is pegged to the US dollar.
So we have this forthcoming election here with this gentleman named Mr. Trump, who I don't want to say looks like he's going to get in. I think numbers, if they trend the polls, it looks like he's going to be the next, or I guess the incumbent, the new president, I guess, coming back here. How much impact do you think that has both on the American economy, that how that reflects on the Canadian economy, and how that impacts our real estate?
I think that's a great question. And I think there is no clear answer. Depends on who you ask, on which side of, you know, which day of the week it is.
Yeah.
Many of the, you know, this is where I rely to a lot more of the American banks, you know, the private banks, you know, the Goldman, the Morgan Stanley, as well as the Goldman Sachs of the world, or even Bloomberg for that matter, to really sort of, you know, unpack what, you know, Trump and Harris will have in terms of political impact for the US as well as globally. But I think what is going to be quite interesting is really, of course, the general talk is that if Trump comes into power, then inflation is going to hold up a lot more because of, you know, potentially tariffs that he's going to put up. And that ultimately is going to be an impact for the American economy in terms of how much spending power they have, right? Prices are going to stay, you know, stay high and potentially even higher.
Yeah.
And so because of that, they're going to have less spending power. So inflation is going to keep high. Whereas on the other side, if the Kamala comes into power, then I believe that, or continues to stay in power for that matter, I think that's going to be where there's probably a little bit more easing in terms of inflation. And that's probably going to actually drive rates down a little bit faster because of that. So I think it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, there, nobody's got a crystal ball, but I think that's what becomes really interesting is that in the US, I think the American economy is really divided at here, right? Now, today we're looking at polls, which is pretty much even. We had just recently had the debate, and it seems like, you know, the poll says that, you know, Kamala has taken a bit of an edge over Trump. But I think if you look at the macro aspect of things, it's going to be very much those three things again, right?
Yeah.
That I'm very based on. One is technology, which the US is dominant on. Second is that you've got their defense, which is anything to do with, you know, military and global defense around the world. And last but not least is the financial aspect. So if they continue to hold these three elements that the US dollar is probably going to hold strong, and if that were the case, regardless whether it's going to be Trump or Kamala, I think it's going to be you know, the theme of American first. And if that were the case, it's going to continue to be a dominant player. And because of that, the flow of capital, or those who continue to look for opportunities in investing will look to the US, whether it's the equity market, whether it's the private equity market, or whether it'll be the bond market, or for that matter, the real estate market. So regardless of what the situation is, I think those are things that many countries around the world and many of those high net worth individuals or investors around the world are still looking very, very heavily into the US dominant plays, whether it's going to be equities or real estate for that matter.
Well, on a previous episode there, you mentioned about whether you currently do or previously had some real estate investments. I think it was London, if I'm remembering correctly. If that's true, what are your thoughts on a market like London or parts of Europe like that right now with what the current world is dealing with and interest rates and inflation?
If I may give my thoughts on that, I think that the UK is the only reason why their currency has started to appreciate is because of the talk of the US coming down in rates. And so largely, I think there's a lot of question as to, you know, support or affordability of these high rates in the UK. And so I'm particularly personally not that bullish in UK, because of course still we're now starting to see the repercussions of what really Brexit is and how that's really starting to take a toll in terms of the UK economy. Yeah. And of course COVID was one of those, you know, things that had challenged the UK in a big way, where prices were so high and people were having challenges in terms of finding the great work and whatnot. So I think this is going to be largely continuing to be the case, Europe being a little bit of that same notion. It is not easy to see where, you know, they're going to be able to come out of this. And that's why they're really looking forward to the US dropping rates, right? That's going to help ease their macroeconomics. And so, you know, with what we're seeing in the UK, rent is dramatically up, right? But yet, it's very unaffordable because of these interest rates being very high. And banks are still in the situation where they're very, very slow to act. And we're seeing, you know, property investors, whether commercial or residential, 6, 8, sometimes 12 weeks to get a mortgage. Yeah. And so it's not easy, even though it seems like in Canada, sometimes it takes a little bit longer, but it's certainly ahead of the trend in many of these aspects against the UK and that of Europe. So opportunities are for those who have cash. That obviously is the big difference. So people with cash to deploy at this point, with a lower loan to value, longer times of getting approvals from loans, and then last but not least of higher interest rates,
yeah,
those who have cash is going to be able to read the opportunity a little bit better. So certainly in the UK, I think, or that of Europe for them, for the most part, I think that the rates are going to come down quickly when the US starts to really reduce their rates, so then that the currency outflow is not going to be dramatically impacted. So I think that's largely expected around the world as well with many currencies.
Jumping in a plane and landing at YVR here, obviously you have a lot of investments in the commercial real estate realm here in the BC market. I'm interested to get your take on sort of what you've seen maybe over the past 6 months and the direction the market has gone. It feels like it's taken a tremendous uptick, lack of inventory still there. Activity has picked up dramatically since about middle of August. It felt like a tap turned on. What are you seeing and what are your thoughts on the BC side of things on the commercial side?
That's a great question, Corey. And I think, you know, if looking at where the BC market is, I think, you know, from what I understand and what I read, what I know, the people I'm talking to, real estate investors, bankers, and also those who are actively deploying capital, BC is one of those rare places that have an opportunity of probably in a lifetime, right? Because of what happened post-COVID, many places around the world essentially stopped building, right? So they're not able to continue to build because of the increase of these rates. The cost has gone up dramatically. Replacement costs have gone through the roof. And that's really allowed that of BC property to shine, you know, in my opinion. A few places around the world have that opportunity. And because people are not going to be able to build the same way, they're not able to build cheap and replacement costs are high.
Yeah.
So people are not going to go, you know, build a new building without really thinking it through, without the numbers really, you know, really making sense. And because of that, the supply and demand is causing an issue where for those, again, with capital, those who understand property investment, those who are not necessarily developers, this is the right time. If ego is not your thing, you don't need your name on a building. I think BC's got a really good market. I mean, if I look at, you know, because I have investments in Eastern Canada as well, and we've talked about in previous podcasts.
Yeah.
The reality is, I mean, government's got a really big part to this, right? And not only the federal government, but also the provincial government. So there's places in Canada that are more favorable to investing or investors. And there's places where they have really shifted their tune, right? With the governments or with the approvals, with how their tendencies are playing out. And one of the things I really want to highlight with this is, regardless whether it's BC or anywhere else, because of how the macroeconomics are, residential property, residential tenancies are going to be the one thing that every investor needs to watch out for.
Yeah.
Because as the economy starts to not look as cheerful, right? Regardless whether it's the US or anywhere else, the reality is every country will, and every country, every province, or every council for that matter, will be more harsh on landlords when it comes to tenancies, right? Yeah. When it comes to residential property. And so you've seen that in places like Eastern Canada, where they've turned very investor, you know, friendly at one point to, fairly negative to investors. As a matter of fact, in some of these provinces, they're no longer allowing out of province buyers. So never mind Canadians, right? So, you know, in many parts of Canada, you're not able to buy residential property if you're not a Canadian passport holder. In these cases, you're not allowed to buy unless you're a resident of these provinces. So yeah. That's how they've turned really on a different angle with investors. And because of that, they've sided a lot more with residential tenancies.
Yeah.
Residential tenants. And you're starting to see that all over the world. And because of that, again, that's why I'm a very, very big believer in commercial real estate, because that's based upon common law versus just tenancy laws, right? Tenancy acts. So I'm very, very much appreciative of the people who've inspired me upon commercial versus that of residential.
And that's been a challenge here in BC for years, is the RTA, the Residential Tenancy Act, from a lot of landlord perspective, has been very tenant focused. And I understand why that is. There's probably, there is the reputation signs, there's bad landlords out there, but the challenge that it's creating from a housing perspective for a private sector is when people are looking at multifamily buildings, that this past year, the maximum increase is 3%, but the inflationary costs of the expenses of the building have far outpaced that number, that it's making it harder and harder probably for some investors to make sense of the multifamily side of things, because your garbage, your recycling, your property taxes, all these things have grown at a much faster pace. One landlord I was speaking with not too long ago said that they were seeing almost an average of like a 12% increase they felt in a lot of their expenses in their multifamily buildings, with regards to elevator maintenance, with regards to property taxes, garbage, recycling, all those things that just add up, insurances, that they just said they're just becoming harder and harder to make sense of it. And then when you find yourself in an interest rate world that we're recently in, that even when you're getting a CHMC insured mortgage, your rates are still higher, that are still having dramatic impact on these, which makes the multifamily sector a much more challenging industry to try to make, asset class to try to make sense of, before you throw in government regulation just from a number standpoint. So I tend to agree there with you. We don't want to shun multifamily investment by any stretch of the imagination, because it's a very sound investment that does sort of repeat itself year after year after year with extremely low vacancy rates and creates a lot of concrete part of people's portfolio. But to your point, it's becoming more and more challenging due to rental restrictions to make sense of the investment side of it versus what you might find on a different asset class, like a retail building or an industrial building, where it's more free market rents versus having the restrictions with very little turnover, yet you're having skyrocketing costs. Another point you made there that's really good that maybe we'll emphasize as well is a lot of investors, knowledgeable commercial investors, whether they be small or institutional, will definitely look at buying properties below replacement cost value. And one of the biggest reasons why that is it prohibits those asset classes from over expanding in certain markets. And one example I've used for a long time is Nanaimo office. You might have in the downtown core, you might have 6, 7, 8 office buildings there that are probably, you know, we might sell for, you know, $6-8 million a building, depending on the size and the income. But if you actually go get a replacement cost appraisal done, you might find it might cost $10-12 million to build that building back. That coupled with the land prices dramatically increasing, it's very hard for developers to look at a plot of land and say, listen, I'm going to build an office building here because the land price doesn't make sense. The construction cost doesn't make sense. And a lot of developers, depending on the asset class, will look for at least 150 basis point spread over when they're actually done construction to a finished stabilized product versus the current market cap rates before compression. So when they look at it from that aspect, it doesn't make any sense. So as an investor, if there's 6, 7, or 8 office buildings today, and I fast forward 20 years or 10 years and the population's up 20-25%, chances are there's probably still only 6, 7, 8 office buildings in the city because the numbers haven't made sense for so many years. Thus, demand is going to increase as population increase. That's going to push up lease rates, and you're going to have a very low vacancy rate because there's not enough product to pick from. So that is a strategy that a lot of smart investors have deployed and large institutions have deployed over years, is trying to find product below replacement cost value, which is an easy thing to do right now with construction costs and the cap rates that have sort of come off in some of these secondary markets. Moving forward. In saying all that, Pete, we've talked to you before about markets in BC that you really like. And when the last episodes you'd made mention about the interior markets and the island markets and stuff like that. Curious to get your thoughts if there's any markets right now that you're still interested in or you're still looking in where you see that there's good value moving forward.
I think with that, it's got to come. I think, Corey, you bring up a really good point as well as the positive migration, right? Where are people going? And it's really back to the basics, right? So, you know, there's many places around the world that are not growing in population the same as that of BC. BC is really attracting people because of the weather, because of the friendly environments, the multiculturalism. You know, the bottom line is people want to be in BC, right?
Yeah.
And they're finding out, I don't just need to be in Vancouver. I can be in on the island. I can be interior BC. I've got the mountains, I've got the water, I've got everything at my disposal within, you know, 45 minutes, an hour.
Yep.
And I think that's a really, really important thing in BC, whereas you're not going to get that in many parts of Canada, never mind the world, right? And so I'm still very, very positive on the island. I'm still very positive on interior BC. But I think one of the more important things is now you got to be even more watchful over what investments are made, right? It's
yeah.
Because the whole, everybody has gone through that element of, okay, we've picked through things, we've gone through the whole scenario of, you know, rates being cheap to rates being expensive. And now as rates are starting to come down, a lot of people are going, okay, well, now it's time to buy. And I go, absolutely, it is a good time and becoming a better time to buy because of a cheap money basis.
Yep.
But at the same time, you really got to be selective over what you want to buy at this point, because now it is not necessary all tide rises all boats.
Yeah.
And I think this is where it's starting to change now, because, you know, coming out of COVID, it's like, yeah, well, you could have really picked anywhere. Right. You could have picked any market. Yeah, it's already gone up. Right. And if you pick the right asset classes, not particularly, and, you know, if you're taking office out of that equation, then really, you know, yes, you've benefited in a great way because, you know, prices of rents have gone up and there is nothing new that's come to the market. So because of that, it's definitely increased, prices all around.
Yeah.
But now as rates are starting to come down, what really rates are actually saying is that they want to stimulate growth, right? And the reason why they want to stimulate growth is that growth is not strong enough. And so if that's the case, then we need to be, as investors, really reading into that and go, it's not just cheap capital now. It's now identifying, you know, what asset classes do we really want and in our portfolio, and what's really going to be survivable, you know, over this next couple of years, at least the next several years, as rates are going to continue to drop. And a lot of talk is whether it'll, you know, be as cheap as it was before. And it probably won't be the case. So therefore, the math has to be even more carefully sought after or carefully worked out. And this is where the banks are really, really careful about who they are allowing to to lend their money to, right?
Yeah.
They're now starting to put in more vacancies as part of their equation. They're now starting to factor in more buffers into their equation to ensure that the bank is made whole.
Yeah.
And so because of that, investors have to be extremely cognizant over what type of asset classes. And because of that, still continue to be the industrial, retail, light industrial. I'd stay out of office personally, just because there's a lot of, has the recovery has not been as quick as to what most have expected when it comes to out of COVID. So
yeah,
I'm still very, very bullish on the island. I'm still very bullish on BC as a whole. And Interior, certainly, I think these are where the times of greatness is going to happen. If you pick up really good assets during this time and your numbers are crunch, there's going to be, an opportunity of a lifetime right now.
Pete, I know I'm going to ask you here if you can dust off your crystal ball here. And just, I do pre-warn you, anything you do say, we do fact check and we do hold you accountable for it 110%. So if you could grab that crystal ball, I'd like to get your thoughts on what does the commercial real estate market look like as interest rates continue to fall here in BC? And then B, I guess the second part of that question is, how far do rates fall? Right now, the BOC rate here is 4.25. We've had three consecutive 25 basis points drop since this started. I believe it was back in June was the first drop. So where do interest rates go and how does that affect the commercial real estate market moving forward?
If I was to, look into the crystal ball where sort of, best, worst and likely scenarios,
yep.
I think the reality is that rates are going to continue to drop. They're not necessarily going to drop as low as they were pre-COVID, but I do believe rates are going to drop because it's going to have to entice, work,
yeah,
right?
Definitely.
And the bottom line is employment. So I think, that's what they look at just as much as they look at the, how this is going to impact real estate. So yep. Because of that, the stimulus of interest rates dropping is a fairly substantial element. So I think if I was to look at this, and I think we talked about this in previous podcasts, and Corey, I think you mentioned that, rates are going to drop more in 2024, sort of, second half of the year. And I think you're largely right. So I think your crystal ball is just as good as anybody, if not more accurately.
Well, it's funny you say that because I got Tim Macklin on my WhatsApp chat there, the head of the Bank of Canada. We're on WhatsApp. So he's giving me all the insights track. So if you want to know anything, just call, I'll tell you.
Absolutely. Right. So, so as rates are going to continue to drop, and I think that's, the US, they're talking about three rate drops this year, and they're probably looking at about another four or five come next year. So you're talking about a combination of sort of like 7-8, maybe even at max 9, quarter points drops in the US. I think Canada, for the large part, is going to follow suit. And I think one of the big things that you're going to have to, really see is that where Canadian dollar is going to be and where yeah. Canadian dollar is right now. So, as the Canadian dollar, they want the Canadian dollar to be a bit weaker if it allows the economy to continue to grow. So I'm no economist, but I look at this from a very practical standpoint.
Yeah.
And I would see that between sort of now till end of next year, I'm still looking at probably 6 rate drops. And so sort of in the neighborhood of 1 to 2 this year, and they're going to continue to do that into next year. And I think that's really largely, if the US drops the way it is, Canada is going to follow suit in a big way because they can't, they want the jobs to continue to be stimulated. They still want the businesses, especially in the Canadian marketplace where small businesses are a really big part. Interest rates really make a difference for these individuals and these small businesses, small, medium-sized businesses. And so being US being the trading partner, I think this is going to be something that Canada has to follow suit on. And because of that, it is largely going to also help the real estate sector because of interest rates dropping. Commercial real estate is probably going to be one of the biggest benefactors of that. And I think it's very welcomed by the industry. So I would see that, continue that the rates are going to drop. And as the interest rates are going to drop, then commercial real estate especially is going to be strong. And it especially is going to get, good assets and good strategies have to come into play and it has to be very prudent. But because of that, I think BC real estate, for certain, my opinion, is still going to continue to grow. Now, it may not really go, it may not certainly double. But I think certainly I'm very bullish. I'm, you know, if I was to rate that, you know, out of 10, I think I'm on a bullish level. I'd be an 8, 8.5 out of 10.
Heard it here first. Economies, commercial real estate, it's on an upward trend. Pete, we know it's early in the morning where you are. We always appreciate you taking the time to join us. But before we let you go, we got a 6-pack of lighthearted questions here. Hoping you can stay up for just a little bit longer to join us for just a few more minutes and some questions.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
The 6-pack is powered by our good friends over at Redpoint Law.
Redpoint Law, Corey, Tim, Falco, Scott, and the team. These are great people with a wealth of experience when it comes to commercial closings and private lending. And I just want to say, Corey, not to cut you off, they have a perfect 5-star review on Google.
So for all your commercial legal needs, visit them at redpointlaw.ca with offices in Vancouver and now open in downtown Kelowna.
What's one book you would recommend our listeners read?
I've previously recommended the one, which is 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership.
Yeah, that's the previous one.
If I was to recommend a book right now where things are, I would recommend the book Angelist.
Angelist.
And so that's where element of venture capital investing really comes in and learning from. You know, because of this economic cycle, one of the other things that I think are really going to be super important is going to be businesses. And as one of the, you know, previous generation starts to become in the retirement range, then these businesses are going to pass on from one generation to the next. And because of that, just as much as property, because one of the big things about property is, you know, previous generation bought property, passes on to the next generation doesn't know what to do with it, doesn't know how to handle it. And so there's opportunity, but there is a huge opportunity in businesses and especially buying businesses. So I think investing in businesses or investing in businesses that you can operate, investing in businesses to scale, and also businesses that are ripe to be taken over by new management. I think this is there's going to be huge opportunity here as interest rates drop because of opportunities to buy out and consolidate businesses. Where instead of creating them, this is the right time to buy existing cash flow in businesses at, you know, very few multiples.
Yeah.
And so I would say Angelist is one of the books I'd recommend at this point in time.
All right. Next question up. I know you're in Hong Kong. I know you've got strong ties to Vancouver and you do have a lot of stuff here. Are the Canucks going to win the Stanley Cup this year?
Well, I always hope that we'd win at one time, right? Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the previous times, I mean, I got to say, I still got my Pavel Bure jersey.
That's the one. That's the one.
So, you know, I'm still definitely counting on it. And I think, you know, after this year, I think that, you know, it's time that we win the Stanley Cup.
There you go. Another concrete prediction from Pete.
That was a really roundabout answer.
Yeah. We're going to hold you to that, Pete. We're going to hold you to that one there. Next question up, Melissa.
All right. What are you binge watching right now?
You know what? I got to say, I mean, I went back to Suits again.
Oh, there we go.
Right. As they're in the news a little bit, and, you know, the buzz is there. I definitely I'm rewatching that. And I'm also, you know, picking up Doctors, right? Is another one that I'm really finding it curious, you know, a lot of curiosity there because of, you know, that's not really in my profession and it's certainly not in my blood. So I'm like, hey, man, this is really fascinating. Some of the things that are, you know, that are inspiring me to think outside the box. So Doctors is something I've recently been binge watching on Netflix.
Well, it sounds like Melissa's dating life, Doctors.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there you go. There you go. It's a good thing that you are watching Suits. For those who don't know, there's a new Suits coming out called, I believe it's called Suits LA, and they filmed the pilot in Vancouver months ago.
Really?
Yeah. And the main character is the guy from Arrow. Remember the TV show Arrow or whatever that was filmed here in Vancouver for the CW? So he's the main character. And I guess the pilot went so good. It was picked up by, I think it was NBC or something I was reading. So they're filming right now Suits LA season one.
Really?
Yeah. So it's going to come out. So
if Meghan Markle's not there, I don't want it.
No, I don't really think, like, again, I don't know, because they did do the spinoff with Jessica from the original Suits, so like when she was in Chicago and that kind of flopped. I think if you're going to do it, because Suits New York, I guess, for argument's sake, could have been, you know, the first series now that we have LA, but but you've got to almost tie it into like the same company where it's like another office for the same law firm. You've got to have Harvey Specter in it. You got to have the characters in it so you can draw the ties back to it. If you try to just make it something completely standalone, which the spinoff with Jessica was, I think it fails because you got to do it. So not saying that we know what we're doing here at the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast, but we just pretty much carbon copied the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast, grabbed the co-host, grabbed everything. So all the listeners would just walk over to us. So
the V Krep's eager little sister.
Yeah. So if we could take that same philosophy and apply it to Suits LA, I think we've got a winner there. Pete, we've had you on the program so many times. We've had to almost customize these six pack of questions here for you. Now, one thing that I know that you're very passionate about, and so am I, but not to the same level, you have a very extensive watch collection. So I'd like to put you on the spot here and ask you, what is your favorite watch brand?
My favorite watch brand, hands down, has to be Audemars Piguet.
AP. AP is, for those listeners.
AP for short, yes.
Melissa,
absolutely.
Melissa looks like a deer caught in headlights right now. Can you maybe elaborate or describe the AP brand for those who may not know? And again, I will say this. If you're not into watches and that's not something that you either have a passion for, or you collect, or you follow, Rolex is to a lot of people kind of the top of the heap, partly because of amazing branding that they've created over decades. But AP, Tech, there's just these other brands that are probably, I don't know, Pete, would you say they're a step up from Rolex? Not that Rolex is bad, but almost like a watch person's brand. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, a watch is really meant to be, I mean, for men or women, right? Women has a few more choices, including that of shoes, bags, right? Accessories, jewelry. But for guys, we're pretty boring, right? I mean, you know, you might have a nice pair of, you know, that's why Suits was such a big deal. Wear a nice suit, you know, nice shoes, right? Yeah. Like some nice wingtips. But really, you don't really have that much choice. You, maybe a nice belt. But the only other thing really that makes us stand out differently from any other person or any other, you know, male on the road is really what type of wristwatch that we're wearing. And, you know, so, you know, whether it's Rolex, whether it's AP or whether it's Patek or, you know, some of the other brands like FP Jorn or more independents like Rubel Force, which I'm a big fan of. I think it's really, you know, what does it stand out to you, right? And how does it make you unique, or how does that stand for your brand?
Yeah.
And I think Rolex is sort of like a, you know, US dollar, right? You can't go wrong, right? If you come back to a default and go, you know, I'm going to buy a Rolex, you'll never, ever go wrong, right? And you'll always be in that category. And so it's like buying a Mercedes. Like, how could you say a Mercedes is wrong? You can't. But if you're looking for something a little bit different, you're looking for your brand to be a little bit different, or you're liking a certain type of style and more personality, you know, that's where other vehicles or other brands are going to come into play. And I think AP or Patek is known for, you know, having a type of identity alongside with those who own it.
Yeah.
So it's not quite like a US dollar. It's more, you know, it's a little bit more exotic. It's like owning a particular, you know, something, another wardrobe, and then something that speaks to, you know, who you are. And I know, Corey, you're big into Rolexes, and I love your collection, my friend. So I'd say, you know, Rolex is the what people recognize. But if you're looking for something a little bit different, that's where, you know, AP or Patek or, you know, Hublot or other brands like, you know, Frank Mueller or Richard Mille, I should say, you know, these are where other brands are going to speak to your personality and let other people who recognize what you wear. That is a relationship builder on itself. So I'd say definitely check into it.
You can't see Melissa here, but she's been showing off and bragging since she started talking about her Apple Watch. She's showing it around the studio. Like,
look, I've had this thing for 7 years and it still tells me the weather. I can text.
It's great. It's great.
Yesterday I lost my phone and I could use my watch to find it. Can you believe that?
There you go. And then just for those listeners and Melissa's sake here as well, let's say I'm in the market to buy an AP watch. How much is an AP watch going to cost me just to get from like an entry level? Am I looking like $10,000, $5,000, $50,000? I'm guessing they're extremely hard to get. So when I'm pulling out the checkbook here, what number gets me in the game? Assuming I can get it from an AD being an authorized dealer, not buying it on the gray market.
I'd say you're probably with an, you know, if let's use US dollar because that'd be infinite dollar, infinite Canadian dollar. But I would say, you know, from a US dollar standpoint, I would say an AP runs pretty much about 35,000 and up US.
55 per, Canadian type thing.
Yeah, that type of thing. So you're really looking at about 35,000 US to start, right? Of course there's many lines in the AP component, that of the Royal Oak or that of the offshore for that matter, 1159. So there's three sort of major lineups in the AP collection.
Yeah.
So you're looking at, generally speaking, which is their most coveted collection is the Royal Oak, which runs probably about 35,000 US to start.
Different world. Moving on, living vicariously through Pete there in his watch collection. Moving on to the next one. Melissa, what do you got?
All right. What's your favorite band or musician?
I still love Blackpink. I'm a Blink. From this side of the world, I don't know if it's nearly the phenomenon over there in Canada and US, but I'd say, you know, Blackpink is definitely my favorite brand, you know, favorite K-pop artist and female band. I can't believe that I'd say that, but both my wife and I love the members and when we've been to their concert, it's just been fascinating and we feel, you know, 10 years younger just like that.
So this is K-pop.
That's my favorite.
K-pop? Is that
K-pop?
I'm gonna.
That's right. So after Psy with Gangnam Style.
Yeah, yeah, that was big.
That was big, right? So four female Blackpink members have made history and they've become the phenomenon, you know, in K-pop. And when they did worldwide tours, right, and all around the world, including that of Canada as well as US. So I'd say, you know, Blackpink is definitely my favorite band, even though I'm looking forward to their sort of get back together because they've signed with individual companies as solo artists as well. But looking forward to their next concert, and I'm certainly right there.
When you said Psy and Gangnam Style, you won Melissa's heart, so she's looking up Blackpink right now because I think she was probably a big Gangnam Style type of person in the club scene. Don't you pull up and I can hear Gangnam Style like from a block away? Is that what you play in your car?
That's how you know I'm coming.
That's how we know Melissa's coming. Pete, last question up here before we let you go and get you off to bed there. You've unfortunately done something horribly wrong. You found yourself on death row, but we're going to give you one more meal before it's all said and done. What meal are you having?
You know what? It's got to be, I'm going to be very, very particular here, but even though it's a broad one, but I have to go with a... I'd have to go with a Wagyu steak.
Ooh,
I'd have to have
choice.
A side of broccolini, maybe a little bit of asparagus with six oysters. You know, I definitely do at least six oysters and, Royal Miyagi's for that matter. And I have to have truffle fries, thick cut with mayo and truffle. And then I would also do a side of mashed potato and I would finish it off with a tiramisu and a Coke.
So you're going to the buffet at the Wynn Las Vegas is what you're saying.
If they have Wagyu, I'm in.
There you go. You're going for a buffet. Pete, as always, we can't thank you enough. I know you stayed up super late into the morning there, Saturday morning, for joining us today. How can our listeners find out more about what you're doing? If they want to reach out, find out what you're all about, how can they do that?
I think LinkedIn is the best. I mean, I've LinkedIn. So look me up on I Am Peter Leung on LinkedIn. I know so many of you guys have connected with me and we've become friends. I feel like I've gotten to know a lot of the podcast listeners through LinkedIn. Thank you for contacting me. I'd love to hear from you guys and how I can help you along your journey and share experiences and as investors, as colleagues, how we can improve together, how, you know, insights can be provided. So look me up and looking forward to meeting you guys virtually.
Amazing. Pete, as always, thank you so much for joining us. We'll let you get to bed and we'll be in touch soon, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Thank you, Corey. Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks, Pete.
Take care. Bye-bye. There you have it, folks. Another great episode with our good friend of the show, Pete Leung, investorpreneur. I always walk away learning something new on the episode there, and I always walk away excited
about real estate. He has such a good energy.
Great energy.
Even though it was like, what, 1:30 in the morning for him?
Yeah.
He's just hopping and bopping.
He's got so much insight.
It's almost like he's from a different world in a way.
And I think one thing too, he's very positive on it. Like he's not scared to tell you if something's not good.
Yeah.
But he also very positive about the delivery of that product. So
yeah,
it's always very motivating and exciting to have Pete on the program. And like to your point there, it's 1:30 a.m. and the guy sounds chipper, like it's noon and he's had three coffees.
Enthusiastic.
Great guy. Very insightful guy. As always. And Melissa, we ran long there, like we said. So we're going to get into it. For those who maybe want to get in part of this busy residential market that you're in, but maybe not everybody's in, how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, you can call me 778-869-4477 or send me an email at melissa@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
And for any of those looking to do commercial real estate, you can reach out to me anytime at send me an email, corey@williamwright.ca. You can call our Vancouver head office, 604-428-5255. Let us know what you're looking for and we'll put you in touch with whatever agent best suits that throughout the province and any of our offices. Or you can visit our website, williamwright.ca, sign up for the latest and greatest news and I'll end up in your inbox.
All right, Corey.
We'll be back next week with another brand new episode as we kind of slowly unpack what we can expect for this second half of the season heading to our fall winter time.
Back to the races.
All right. Enjoy. Thanks for listening, guys. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Subscribe today.